Fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the Pantene's, baby.
Hello and welcome to the tech podcast nobody asked for, but everyone loves, and it's called Two and a Half Bens. I'm Phoneboy.
I'm Phoenix.
I'm Sir Ryan Bemrose.
Oh, there you go. Well, you know, you can join us every other week on Fridays live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, or 6 p.m. Specific. There we go. On 2.5bens.live. You can, of course, listen later on 2.5bens.
Or 6.11, as the case may be.
Or 6.11, yeah. You can listen later on 2.5bens or on Apple Podcasts. Fuck Spotify.
Yes. Fuck Spotify.
Yes, way later.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, fuck Spotify. I'll talk about that as we start off here, because it's a tech rant in itself.
Oh, and it's wonderful.
Yes. You can send us feedback via email, feedback@2.5bens.com, or you can leave a vocal mail if you wish to 253-237-3321. Yeah, we use it for the Lotus Effect also.
I heard .com. Did anybody else hear .com?
Maybe. I don't know. That's the Lotus Effect. Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern. Anyway.
No, and I know what you've got on the mind.
Anyway, don't I always? But
yeah, well, the chat's not any better. Mama T and I are divvying up who gets heads and who gets tails on Sir Ryan Bemrose.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my.
Well, because she said he's supposed to take her to Argentina. I said, let's flip a coin. She said, let's flip him instead. I said, I get the tail.
No problem. Next time I need to change my password, I will think of you guys.
Fantastic. We appreciate that.
Exactly. So why am I saying fuck Spotify? So I get a message.
Why not?
Well, okay. Well, this is.
I was going to say, other than because you came to your senses.
Yeah, because you've heard of Spotify.
So. Okay, I'm gonna actually have to pull the clip from it, because I think this is actually the. I'm not gonna play the whole clip, but. I get it, but so I get a message from Spotify saying we need you to respond to a potential copyright issue, and it was on. Well, this is what got flagged, and by the way, we've been using this clip in our show for fuck at least 150
practically forever.
Yeah, exactly. And it starts out something like this.
What is this? A freak out?
This is kind of strange.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not going to play the whole clip, but
and it also is altered. That is not the whole clip. It is not an original. It has been embellished with our co-host as well as the Super Trooper boys. Yeah. So fuck Spotify.
Well, anyway,
it's also from a movie if copyrights were even remotely sane would be 30 years out of copyright.
Well, yes, exactly. True. But anyway, so it got flagged, and I just kind of looked at it and said, well, you know what? I think this is the universe telling me, yeah, we don't need to be on Spotify. So I actually went through the process of removing our shows from Spotify and even deleting my Spotify listener account. This process, by the way, which I spoke to a human, I'm pretty sure, based on the complete lack of understanding of the question.
Or a particularly compelling AI.
Well, except, yeah, she had there was enough pauses going on that I think it was an actual person as opposed to an AI. Unless the AI economy is getting really, you know, bad that you have to...
I've got a story about that.
Stories
funny
on that,
enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I did go through the process. It's like, yes, those are my podcasts. I want them removed from Spotify. I want my account removed. I don't know how many times I said this. It's like, yeah, you don't have a podcast. No, I want my Spotify account deleted.
Hold on. Yeah. Because we forgot to do something at the beginning of the show, so I'm going to take care of it right now.
Okay, what's that?
We do not now, nor will we ever, authorize an AI to use any of our content. You have been warned.
There you go.
Disclaimer over.
Okay, I forgot about that.
But Cotton Gin uses our content all the time, though.
Okay, but he has permission. That's the difference.
Yes.
And he's not an AI. He's just a lazy vibe.
Allegedly.
Coder. Yeah. Cotton Gin knows we love him.
Yes, exactly. So, okay, I don't know that we got any feedback this week other than the fact that I needed to update the RSS feed, which I did. Yeah, because of how I have to post the show in podcast.
Yeah, if I recall, episode 21 was posted about 3 days ago.
Well, actually, exactly. Well, yes, because it was on the website. The RSS feed didn't get updated. Anyway, it's been fixed.
Phone boy,
what?
You need some ice for your junk, dude, because he just roasted your chestnuts, brah.
I already know that I fucked it up. How much more roasted can I be?
Never challenge that. You have two people who will answer that question.
I know. That's okay, but anyway.
Yes, you can cut the sexual tension with a knife.
Yeah, you can cut this. All right, so who wants to go? I think we'll actually start with the story that Weirdo brought, because I actually we
oh yes
yeah we,
Ooh,
we
okay
yeah we we'll start with the story I, Weirdo brought because
I was gonna say don't pick me. I actually made every effort to try to limit myself to only three stories because I was tired of 3-hour shows.
Okay, well that's fine.
I didn't succeed, but I tried.
I was gonna say and how well did that succeed? How many did you bring?
Four.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I think I have at least that many.
Okay, so fair enough. All right, so this story, which Weirdo posted in the chat before we got started, Firestarter malware survived Cisco firewall updates and security patches. Oh boy, this is it's on the CISA list and all of that. So the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agent and the U.K. National Cybersecurity Center believe the adversary attained initial access by exploiting a missing authorization issue, which is a CVE 2025-20333. There's a magic number right there. And
that
or
means this was from last year.
Yeah, well, this is, but that's the, yeah, they haven't patched the bug yet. Are we surprised?
It's Cisco.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. So, you know, basically they breached the system in such a way that it basically survives in this particular issue, right? Once it's backdoored. Yeah, you can upgrade and it's still there. And, you know, basically what Cisco says is you pretty much have to nuke the appliance from orbit. It's not, you can actually just properly reload the image from
the,
you know,
the
like
official recommendation is that you throw out the device entirely and then go buy one from a company that's heard the word security before.
Yes, exactly. That's what I would say. But anyway,
and not to mention all of the shit you're going to lose. Because an image backup doesn't back up all the files and everything, right?
Well, it depends on how the answer to that is it depends. It depends on what they're backing up. If they're doing an entire,
it's like the answer to boxers or briefs.
Yeah, something along those lines. It
depends.
It depends.
Jesus Christ! No, that's the answer to what an 80-year-old woman tastes like. Here's the thing. That was so bad, Sir Rye had to fucking mute himself. But no, thinking about it, okay, this is a prime reason why you should regularly back up your system.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, sometimes you have to reimage the system anyway, trying to do an upgrade. You never know sometimes what, and that's actually sometimes a good idea is to reimage the system, not necessarily because it got worked or whatever, but it definitely is something that you want to.
Yeah, but think about this: for those who didn't know that they've been infected,
it could be bad.
By doing a reimaging, you're kind of solving the problem that you didn't even know you had in a way.
Well, yeah, if you had to reimage it for some reason, yeah. All right.
Well, you were saying occasionally reimaging is not the worst idea.
There's some things in my day job where sometimes doing a reimage is the right answer because you have to change file system types or some nonsense like that. But the way some customers do upgrades is basically a fresh install. So there's lots of ways to.
That's
fair.
So
again, every one of these systems is different. So. All right, I didn't really want to. There was not much to say about that, other than the fact that yes, Cisco got
Cisco got owned.
Cisco got owned.
Yeah, yes. Play the Nelson one. Ha ha.
Exactly. Well,
not sure we have that.
I'm not sure we do or not. But
although I like that one.
Yes. All right. So maybe I'll go first. I don't know. I mean, this is just kind of a, and also with these stories, I get this one. It says Apple and Google broke their own rules by promoting Nudify apps, according to a report. And this comes from the Rules for Thee, Not for Me department.
Are we surprised?
Yeah, we're not. That's why I figured this is the case. For the Tech Transparency Project, which is part of a nonprofit tech watchdog, first revealed in January that Apple and Google shares or Apple's app stores had over 100 Nudify or undressing apps. There are apps with the sole purpose of taking images of people, usually women, and editing them to appear that person without clothing, creating what's called non-consensual intimate imagery. Many of these apps use generative AI to create deepfakes. Apple and Google both have language in their policies that prohibit apps with overly sexual or pornographic material. This is the Apple version, and sexually suggestive poses in which the subject is nude, blurred, or minimally clothed, according to Google. And they both enforced these policies in the past, particularly by going after porn apps. But Apple and Google make money from app developers by running advertising and taking part of paid app subscriptions. Analytics firm AppMagic found that these nudify apps were downloaded 483 million times and made more than $122 million in lifetime revenue.
So I have a question real quick, though.
Yeah.
You said that the policies expressly prohibit this stuff?
Yes, and they go ahead and allow them anyway. Well,
Hold on, though. Yeah, they do. And it's not even... Yeah, they're making a ton of money. It's called the terms of service. Because, boy, are they fucking you, both companies.
Yeah, well, that too.
My only question is, will the links to several of these apps be in the show notes?
Why didn't I see that coming?
Well, except that would require you to get your phone out of your drawer, Ryan, and you'd have to actually click on Google Play
and enable an app store. I understand there are problems with it.
Exactly. So,
yeah, and your desktop is not. it's too cluttered already.
Exactly. So there wasn't much
with
on
porn.
That. That wasn't much. I don't have much more with that story, but that was just kind of like, yes, these platforms are, yeah, I look at this and it's like, okay, yeah, the platforms don't follow their own rules. Film at 11, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you had me at porn.
Okay.
Where's the shock there?
Yeah, exactly. And you had me at porn. I think I have to write that. I think I have to write that down as a show title. Okay, so...
How can they pay me?
Anyway.
Hey, you say porn, there's no better than Ron Jeremy.
That's right. Exactly.
No, there's plenty better than that fat fuck, but anyway.
All right.
He used to be decent back in the day, and then he became a scumbag.
I know this goes down to personal taste, but I honestly prefer looking at women.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, we have that in common, and move on.
Oh my!
I can tell that I'm out.
Okay,
I'm out.
Am I going
this evening?
I'm done. So my question is who's next? Because I've shot my first story.
What a surprise! You shot your wad quickly.
Okay, then I guess I'll do a story. You know, trying to find some tracks to get back onto.
Rails? What rails?
Yeah.
I don't remember any rails. I got poor phone boy dead over here, right? I'm bad tonight.
So I've got a story of goalposts being moved. In this case, the topic, the title that I've given it is Anthropic removes the only useful part of Claude for a $20 per month tier.
The story was looking when I was looking earlier.
This
today.
Has to do with a product called Claude Code, which is you may remember it from last episode when the Claude Code source got leaked. I don't believe that was particularly related to this one.
Well,
but,
no, I think it was some CLI tool that accessed it. I don't think it was the entire code base, but.
Well, whatever the case, this actually has almost nothing to do with the leak, or at least there's no connection being drawn in the articles. I just thought it was interesting that I spotted that. Claude Code is Anthropic's vibe coding assistant. It is one of the only useful things that AI is offering, because for the most part, the vast majority of what AI does is either, chatbots, the ability to make cartoon porn, which I do appreciate, but I don't personally partake, or at least I don't talk to the AI about it, or parlor tricks, really. I mean, AI does a lot of stuff that you're like, hey, that's really cool, and I can impress my CEO because we're ramping up the synergies or something like that, but it doesn't actually do anything. But the coding thing, the vibe coding, is one thing that a lot of people find to be actually quite useful. And Anthropic's offering is called Claude Code, which is just an AI assistant that kind of tries to help you with everything to do with generating programs. Figure it out. Anyway, sometime around last Tuesday, Claude Code vanished from the pro tier of Anthropic's subscription model. The pro tier is the $20 per month tier. The next one above that is $100 per month. There was no press release. There was no advance warning. There was no notes in a changelog anywhere. And as of the writing of the article that I just dropped in the notes, Anthropic had never said anything at all. It was just the people paying $20 a month. I guess the price schedule for Anthropic is you pay a certain tier and you get access to whatever they decide to offer you for that tier.
Sounds like a grab bags scenario.
Kinda. Well, they removed Claude Code from the $20 a month.
Is it still in the one for 100?
Allegedly, yeah. I don't know. It actually doesn't say whether it's still in there, but there's a lot of speculation that that's where it's going to land. So I'm not really sure.
So this is a money grab, in other words.
That's exactly what it looks like. I cannot confirm that because Anthropic has not responded either way. The Claude Code was, the article goes on into several paragraphs of speculating, and then also talks about why local models make more sense and as a shield against enshittification, which I pretty much agree with. Silicon Valley, they're basically decrying the fact that a big Silicon Valley company yoinked the goalposts and altered the deal after you started paying, and that a lot of people pay Anthropic $20 a month precisely so they can get access to Claude Code. What the authors of this article don't seem to acknowledge is that this is pretty much everything that Silicon Valley has been doing for 30 years.
Well, no shit.
It's, I've altered the deal. Pray I don't alter it further. They don't necessarily walk in going, oh, let's bait and switch these people. No, bait and switch is just kind of a natural way of doing business in Silicon Valley as people realize that, oh, shit, our business model isn't making us any money. We'd better alter it in some way. And that usually involves enshittifying your product. Now, there was a follow-up from Ars Technica, which I hate linking them, so I'm not going to, but you can probably find it. Where they got a statement from Anthropic itself, who they responded, I guess, late on Wednesday. According to Ars Technica, Anthropic was testing the removal of Claude Code. Because, we weren't trying to screw over the $20 a month here, people. We were just A-B testing it. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't tend to believe them. But even if it's true, that's shitty.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
And we have, we have some confirmation from NAM that's in our chat, right? Which if you come to 2.5bens.live, you can figure out how to join. I saw that as well, right? And we're surprised they're gonna, we're not gonna do it. It's also another very Silicon Valley way of handling something, right? They'll do something and hope nobody notices.
Claw 2 said existing users still have it for the $20 tier, but they're jerking off the new users to judge the metrics for future pricing strategies.
That's not a surprise. And as Boy was saying, and this is precisely what I think that is actually happening here, is a Silicon Valley company will test over some new policy that absolutely fucks the user so they can gauge how many people scream bloody murder over it. And if the pushback is too much, then they back up and say, oh, sorry, we were just A-B testing. We were just trying it out, or it was just a mistake, or anything other than we were trying to screw you and get it past you. No, we'll put it back. Don't worry. Just please, trust us. We're still good. Because that's standard operating procedure for Silicon Valley forever.
That sounds a lot like the liquid ass rollout that when everyone freaked out and told Apple, we fucking hate it, instead of going, okay, we'll remediate, they went, fuck you. Tough.
So I guess our chat room, and like I said, I don't use the product. I was just going by, the article I dropped in the chat was one of many, And then there was an Ars Technica, which was a follow-up where Anthropic finally made a statement. You know, I don't know. These stories tend to develop very quickly because a company will do something, and then within 5 minutes, there are 100,000 posts on Twitter screaming one way or the other, and that's how they gauge whether or not, you know, whether or not the move was a good one is, you know, how pissed off did we make our users? Oh, we didn't really mean to. So I guess it sounds like the $20 tier currently has Cloud Code. Okay. Well, good for you, but don't count on it staying, I guess is where I'm at, because
I think
usually
that's a fair statement.
Most of the time that a Silicon Valley company pulls this kind of bullshit, they they get the crazy pushback from users. They immediately put it back and say, oh, we were just testing, or, oh, it was a mistake. And then they wait for everybody to calm down a bit, and then they yoink it anyway. That's kind of standard operating procedure. So I put down this with in my notes with a hashtag of it's happening, because I see this as one of the first signs of the impending reckoning where Silicon Valley companies finally start to realize they're going to, at some point, have to charge people what it costs them for this AI shit. Now, the Ars Technica did have some quotes from the Anthropic statement. They say, the way people use a Claude subscription has changed fundamentally. Engagement per subscriber is way up. We've made small... this is so bullshit, but... We've made small adjustments along the way, weekly caps, tighter limits at peak, but usage has changed a lot, and our current plans weren't built for this. So we're looking at different options to keep delivering a great experience for users, which is corporate speak for exactly what I just said. They desperately want to charge users more and are trying to figure out how to do it without pissing everyone off.
Well, the other part of this, and Phoenix is dying. I think she has a story along these lines. Yes.
Exactly along these lines. You're about to feel the AI money squeeze is the title. That's all I'm going to say. Go.
Yes. But this is,
it explains exactly why this is happening.
Yeah. Because you start talking. I'm sure I'm probably going to spoil a little bit of the story. Not that I've read it, but
but you can predict.
Yeah. But you can predict because we've seen a few things. Right. So we know, you know, there's this thing about all the components not being I have a story about that. Right. It's probably more of no shit, Sherlock kind of a thing. Not much to mention. But, you know, the cost is like the component manufacturers are going, we cannot build anymore, Captain. that's going to make the quick. Somebody fucking ISO that shit.
I think we can probably identify that, while we have seen booms and busts and bubbles in this industry over and over again, at least, you know, you and I have phone boy.
Yeah.
This one has got the speculation has gone higher than I've ever seen it, even during the .com bubble.
Yeah, it just has that fool's gold feeling to it. And when you just look at the entire and it's like I've seen the entire stack of, you know, the house of cards that's been built. Why I've watched these houses of cards being built and fall, you know, more than once at this point, you know. So this is just the next round of, you know, okay, yeah, because you're just looking at the resource problems, the fact that people were really not liking AI. I mean, all of these things just come together. I'm going to let you cover your story. We should probably do that because we've been talking around this because it's the same idea, right? But all of that stuff is just going to boom. And I think we should let's do your story, honey, because, yeah, I'm sorry.
Because I feel like I'm going to wet my pants if I don't get this out.
Oh, can you film that?
Jesus Christ, no.
Okay, well, I guess I'll just have to get my porn from the AI.
What can I say?
Please don't.
Exactly. Okay, so why I was absolutely clawing at the bit for this is because, yes, earlier this month, and this is not related to the Claude Code thing, okay? But earlier this month, millions of OpenClaw users woke up. Now, that's where that statement should stop, but it doesn't.
No, because that's not what happened.
I know. They woke up to a sweeping mandate. Basically, Anthropic is being severely restricted. Now, why would that be? Oh, well, the question's being asked, if we are seeing the end of the basically free or close to free AI era coming to an end. It's too soon to say, but there are some signs, and this Claude Code thing is definitely one of those bright neon ones. So between 2024 and 29, capital investment in AI data centers is predicted to reach about $6.3 trillion. That's a massive amount of money. No bullshit.
And those are, by the way, are not all going to get built out. That's what it looks like on paper before right. people back out of those agreements because they realize that nobody wants that much AI.
Well, not only that, but they can't afford them because they don't have the resources to.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
And those resources don't exist.
In order for these AI model providers to generate a return on invested capital, an ROIC, of at least 25%, there's just no way that they can, but that's what they have to do. Okay, if the returns fall below 12%, institutional capital loses interest, and there's better money elsewhere, which means these venture capitalists and everything, they're going to pull out quicker than a teen without a condom. Okay, you get below 7%, you're in write-down territory, which is an unmitigated disaster for all the investors in the tech. And to reach the bare minimum of 7%, one of these analysts that spoke in this article that I found forecasted that these companies would need to earn cumulatively close to $7 trillion in revenue through 29. Do we really think 3 more years is going to sustain that kind of financial drive?
At $20 a month from all of the people who want to vibe code something? Not in a million years.
Yeah, I mean, that's close to $2 trillion a year by the end of the period. And in order to achieve historic returns, they'd have to make that up to 8.2 trill, same amount of time. And the prediction for all of this is that they're only going to be able to hit a fraction of that to get to 7% ROIC. There's no way. So the question is being asked, how do these providers make this money? Well, by selling access to what are known as tokens. Token, for anyone who doesn't know, is essentially a unit of data input that an AI model can use and understand and process. Okay? Could be text, image, audio, whatever.
NFTs.
One token is generally worth about 4 characters in the English language. So, for instance, the word bathroom would likely process as 2 tokens. A paragraph, about 100 tokens. And an entire 1,500-word essay, about 2,000 tokens per OpenAI's estimate on this. I mean, to reach those revenues, the number of tokens that would have to be purchased is mind-bending. So even assuming a very generous profit margin of 10% per token, that would mean that token consumption between now and 2030 would need to grow by 50 to 100,000 times. So basically, yeah, there's no F in way.
So what you're saying is, like, people would have to start switching their code from Python to Java in order to use that many characters.
I mean,
sorry, programmer joke.
Yeah.
Well, no, I was literally sitting here.
Friends use Java.
I was gonna say. Wait. Okay. So, side digression about we mentioned you, Phoneboy, and I did today because I was looking at something on my Fondle slab.
I don't know if I'm flattered or not.
You should be, actually. This is good. So I'm looking at something, and the damn thing, because I have ad blockers on, it's just rendering like a piece of shit. And Phoneboy's like, well, you know, you could turn those off real quick. I said, oh, fuck no. If I need to turn my ad blocker off, I don't need to go to your website. And that's where you came in for that exact reason. Because, oh, look, I have to have something that doesn't block the Java code. Well, I guess I don't need to look at that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've got one of my stories. I did not go to the original source because their website was shit. So I took the Tom's Hardware summary.
Well, sometimes that's what you do, right? Or you run it through Archived Today, which is a fine service for getting around paywalls.
So thank you for letting me finally get all of that out, because I was just bursting at the seams with the two of you talking about the whole paying for AI and how, you know, this, that, and the other thing they're taking away, and they're moving around, you know, playing the shell game with the features for what pricing tier. It's just, yeah, because they're panicking. They're in a full-on, you know, flubber in a flashbulb panic, because they've got to make money in amounts there's no way on this earth, in even quantum computing, you know, amounts of time that you're going to make that money.
You know, Silicon Valley CEOs are panicking and scrambling. And I guess in being true to the t-shirt that I'm wearing today, all I can say is good.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Good.
Wait, I missed that. What was said? What did you say, Rai?
The CEOs of Silicon Valley companies, of AI companies, are scrambling and freaking out because they overpromised. And my response to that, in keeping with the Grumpy Cat shirt that I happen to be wearing right now, my response is good.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Exactly.
I'm a fan of the, you know, you get what you deserve for the greed and whatever else that you are exhibiting. Yeah. Go down in flames, have fun with
all
that.
All right, let's let Ryan get to his first story.
Anthropic Claude Code was my first story.
I'm like, yeah, did you miss it? Dude, where are you? You're not allowed to pillar before the show anymore. It's your turn, sir.
Anthropic Claude Code? Okay, no, I'm sorry.
No, I've got to send you the link for mine.
Yeah.
But you did
yours. Somebody needs another Bailey's and coffee.
No, I do.
Hey,
I do.
Bailey's and coffee sounds really
good. Okay, actually,
good.
You did
Come
do your first
now.
Story.
Yeah,
okay.
I was talking about me.
Oh, well, please, by all means.
Okay. I have a vibe coding story, though. And you,
okay,
and,
so well, in that case, I will do
Yeah. Yes, exactly. The headline from, this is a PC Mag article. I just vibe coded a global mass surveillance site in 2 hours with OpenAI's Codex. It was terrifyingly easy. From the whoops, they did it again department. Now, this is this guy that wrote this article. He said, my original goal was just to compare the coding experience of OpenAI's Codex with that of Anthropic's Claude Code, which, you know, he tried recently also, and he ended up with a dash. And the fact that he ended up with a dashboard with live camera feeds from cities around the world turned out to be surprisingly timely. When the piece was originally written, the issue of AI tools being used for public surveillance was at the center of a controversy involving Anthropic and U.S. Department of Defense. Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei refused to allow his company's technology to be used for mass public surveillance. Anthropic lost the contract, so OpenAI swooped in to replace it, claiming its contract protects against unacceptable use. Now, broadly speaking, the project solidified something hadn't been fully proven, at least that AI has made simple locally hosted websites nearly as easy to create as any other AI generated content. You just provide creative direction and iterate on the AI's output, and that's great. But anyone can prototype a new business without hiring a programmer spin up a super customized product that has no big company would ever offer, like my Claude Code project, a version of Zillow tailored to my home buying search. I'm doing it again with Codex underscored the potential for AI to break down the walled garden of software engineering so that everyday people can experiment with tech. But when it comes to our everyday privacy and surveillance, those same underlying capabilities could prove disastrous without the right restrictions. As Amodei put it, powerful new AI tools assemble scattered, individually innocuous data into a comprehensive picture of any person's life automatically and at massive scale.
I have two words for you. AI slop. Go on.
Well, there's AI slop, but it's also they can get...
It's also like not just... With far too many products, they've been like, let's build the product and then we'll staple security onto the side later, which is a terrible, terrible way to make products. It guarantees you're going to have security holes for the lifetime of the product. But with AI, they seem to have solved it by just not bothering to try to staple anything. There's just no frigging security. There's just, hey, let's, every one of these people is is following the example provided by Dr. Hammond in Jurassic Park, where they're like, we thought about whether we could, and we never thought about whether we should. They're just, let's, everything about AI is just, let's build the stuff and then try to decide whether, you know, maybe somebody else will decide whether or not it can destroy the Earth. We're just building and deploying it all of it. Why not?
And that's exactly the thing, is that just because one can does not mean that one should. AI is literally the IKEA of the tech world. Because when you get done building the shit, there's still some screws left over and you don't know where the fuck they go.
Yeah. And
you don't know how many times you can sit on it before it collapses underneath you.
Well,
that as well.
So, yeah. So, but this is, that is, the fact that AI is connected to everything can pull it all together. And yeah, that, I could see how that could be potentially bad, right? It's like, wow, yeah.
It's also a matter of integrity and quality, okay? Just because you can pump out a bunch of stuff doesn't mean it's worth its salt.
Yeah, it's still, even if it gets
or it's data centers.
Well, yeah.
Well, yes. Either way, if it's not worth the amount of time, money, and effort that you're putting into it, why bother? It's the whole, AI saves so much time coding until you have to try to debug it. Then all that time you saved and more is then being spent trying to find that fucking curly bracket.
Which is why the trick that's been known in Silicon Valley for 20 years is you don't debug it. You just deploy it to the users and now it's their problem.
Sounds about right. Yeah, it's like, no, we do. I'll let our users QA it. And yeah, we still won't fix the bugs. I'm looking at you, fucking Apple Music. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Okay, I have nothing more to say on that story.
Wait, I wanna bring something up that I just thought about.
Okay.
So I want to highlight, because you said fixing the bugs, Apple Music, blah, blah, blah. My brain went to that fucking firewall issue we had. I think we should highlight that real quick. That was kind of nuts. Where my computer kept losing internet? Kept losing internet? Like, where the fuck? What's going on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we were.
No, this has happened since the last Ben's Bay.
Oh, are we talking about the one where you were like in your work and doing your schoolwork? And
I'm talking about the one where you literally had to jiggle your handle on your firewall.
Oh, this is a different problem. Oh, yeah. I
thought the nerds would like this one.
Okay, well, so I woke up, or was it like first thing in the morning? I can't remember what it was, but I started noticing that there was a problem, and I'm going, okay, my Wi-Fi, I'm not getting an IP address. This is interesting.
Oh, yeah, I know what it was. We turned the television on.
Yes.
And we were having an issue. We looked at it, and it had an APIPA, and,
Yeah, you shouldn't have to troubleshoot your television to watch.
So wait, here's the problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it, and I know Ryan's going to jump all over this one. Your fucking television shouldn't have an IP address.
Well, it probably shouldn't have an Apple logo on it either, but that's a different discussion.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
What's its uptime?
Is there any uptime? I don't know.
That's just a segue to one of my stories.
Oh, I see.
Does anybody really know what time it is?
Exactly. Well, yes, so my Apple TV, which is down in the living room, was it connected via Wi-Fi, and I'm going, I went up to the firewall, looks okay. No, it turned out that my access point, which is behind the firewall, because of course I don't use the firewall that comes inside of these Chinesium routers. I know better than that. I have an industrial grade thing that actually has security built into it.
I know that routers are security holes, and that's why I plug all of my computers directly into the public internet.
Well, there you go.
You said what, directly into the internet?
Yes, of course.
Fuck yeah. Make sure that it's
raw
in front
dog
of that.
The internet. There you go. Raw dog.
Raw dog in the internet.
Yeah, raw dog. Raw dog the internet.
That's fantastic. Yes, make sure that all your security devices securely sit behind your IoT devices.
All of my light bulbs have a public IPv4. That's right. That's opulence for you.
The barbecue fucking emails me again. We're going to have an issue. There are way too many things that have apps for them. I just want to point that out.
Yes, you're right. Like it annoys Apple me. And Android.
Yes, I agree. I'm not going to disagree with that. Oh my God. Yes. It is. Yes. We could do so much better. So
can I go or not yet?
Yeah, you can go. Go for it.
How do you usually end your stories?
I've ended my story. I don't know. She interjected.
Because I thought it was interesting that you tell the story about how the WAP fucked off.
Yeah, I had to actually just basically, I was trying to troughshoot it. I'm going, well, because I'm standing in the bedroom where the router is, because that's where the only cable outlet is that actually has power most of the time. Anyway, that's a separate problem the house has. I'm going, it would work for a little bit and then it would all of a sudden stop working. And I'm going, okay. I did an ARP scan from my phone using one of these networking tools. And I went, it's not seeing the router. And so I kind of did the, let's turn it off and turn it back on again. You know, this typical, you know, have you tried shoving up your ass? Well, I did that. And I did that enough times and did the hokey pokey and my fucking Wi-Fi came back up. So, that's what it's all about. Hey.
Let Rye go with his story.
I'm going to talk about Blue Hammer.
Motherfucker.
No, he's not.
I'm not.
Yes, you are. Go on.
Yes, you are. Fuck. I'm wondering if you... I want to know what you got, because I have something about Blue Hammer as well.
Well, okay. So I've got Blue Hammer, Red Sun, Undefend, and MSRC's corporate bullshit.
You've got what I've got.
Okay. Do you want me to go through this, or do you want me to...
No, I absolutely, want you to go through this, because especially the company that it is dealing with, I think this is most appropriate for you and your former position. So
let's start with a security researcher / hacker. We don't really know much about him, or even if it's a him, because anonymous, but goes by the name Nightmare Eclipse on GitHub or... Chaotic Eclipse on the Blogspot account. The Blogspot is Dead Eclipse 666. So you'll hear that too. No name is given, whatever.
They have him as Chaos Eclipse on GitHub in the article I found.
Yeah, but there's, the Blogspot has, Chaos Eclipse is the title of the Blogspot. Dead Eclipse 666 is the URL. Nightmare Eclipse is the name of the GitHub account. So it's not really clear. I've seen all three. That's why I mentioned it. But this person has some kind of undisclosed history with MSRC, which is Microsoft. I don't remember what it's called. It's the people at Microsoft who deal with security reports.
I think it's remediation something. Let me look it up.
I don't know. It's the Microsoft Retard Council.
Yes.
Anyway, this person has some kind of undisclosed history with it. Reading from his blog, he says things like, I never wanted to reopen a blog and a new GitHub account to drop code, but someone violated our agreement and left me homeless with nothing. They knew this will happen, and they still stabbed me in the back anyway. This is their decision, not mine. When I was there, when I was at Microsoft, MSRC had the best and brightest of all the Microsoft security brains. We actually lost one of our best developers to that group because he was going there because he was like one of the best testers we had. I say developer, but he could, you show him a bug and he could, within 30 minutes, point to the part in code where it happened. I mean, he was just the kind of person who just like throw a blindfold on and point, and he was right. And he left to go to MSRC because those are all of the most interesting problems.
Okay, well, that was MSRC 15, is Microsoft Security Response Center.
Oh, yeah, don't care. Anyway, apparently that's not what they are anymore, because according to stories from researchers in recent years, it's now mostly staffed by your kind of flowchart followers that you find in a tier one tech support. I guess. Apparently, though, this chaotic eclipse was unhappy with them. So what does one do if one is a little bit infantile and really, really pissed at a big corporation that doesn't return your emails? Well, he published a proof of concept for an exploit for a zero day. One of the things MSRC, you know, will tout, I'm sure it's on their website, they will say it in every email, in grim corporate speak, is we want responsible disclosure, which is, of course, the security idea that if you find a vulnerability, the first thing that you do is you go to the vendor who created the software that has the vulnerability, you tell them about it in private, you wait for them to fix it, and then and only then, do you actually, as far as Microsoft is concerned, you never tell the world. Microsoft will tell the world and then credit you with the discovery and maybe give, if there's a bug bounty program, they'll give you some money on the back end.
This is standard sort of business in cybersecurity.
It's been standard in the security industry for years. Microsoft
also another
thing
that AI has fucked up because of all these AI tools that supposedly find bugs because they're fucking creating them. A lot of companies have canceled their bug bounty programs. We've reported on it here on the show at one point.
Well, because suddenly people are having AI generate these bug reports and the people verifying them are getting swamped by slop. What a surprise. Anyway, Microsoft has not always, they have a reputation for not necessarily holding up their end of the responsible disclosure. For example, Google has always had a view of responsible disclosure, which is you report it and Google has 60 days to fix it. And if you don't hear anything from them, because, these security researchers, their currency is credit. Their currency is in their circles is what bugs did you find? And obviously, if you only tell the vendor and you don't tell anyone, you're not getting any credit for the bugs that you worked very, very hard to find. Google, for example, I think is 60 days. And they say, you know what? If we don't patch it within 60 days, go ahead and publish it. I know that Apple for a long time had a disclosure timer. I think their timer was probably like 15 years, but there was one. Microsoft doesn't specify a timer at all. They just say, your ass needs to sit on the bug until we bother to fix it. And then I happen to know from having been on the other side of the Microsoft firewall that when a bug like that comes in, it just drops into a bug database, and then program managers will sit there and juggle it, and developers will say, they'll say, how long does it take to fix? And a developer will be like, well, this was fundamental to the architecture of the component, so we're looking at 4 or 5 weeks. And the program manager's like, okay, well, how can we prevent people from finding it? Microsoft is kind of like that. So they don't specify time at all. If they don't feel like fixing your bug, then as far as they're concerned, you should just never disclose it, and it should just... Let's pretend that bug doesn't exist. And as long as nobody else finds it, it won't ever get exploited, right? Well, I get the feeling that the combination of MSRC having been corporatized for a long time, combined with Microsoft's policies of not particularly lighting a fire under security vulnerabilities when they're exposed, I don't know what this particular researcher said about, he actually says some weird things like, trying to read this off the website. Basically, he suggested that Microsoft left him homeless and quote, beat him up, which I hope was metaphorical.
Those who fuck with Bill Gates find out, I guess.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what happened. It sounds, if you take what this guy posted in the blog, he says that they left him homeless with nothing. They knew this would happen and they stabbed him in the back. I mean, I don't know what happened. It sounds sensational. And if half of what he says is true, then that's probably a great story. But this guy being anonymous, you know, we don't know that story. But suffice it to say, he felt like he was not getting his end of the deal out of responsible disclosure to MSRC. And so he published a proof of concept of a zero day called Blue Hammer. The details behind Blue Hammer was, and this, by the way, was a little over 2 weeks ago. So it was before our last show. But Blue Hammer does, and it's a pretty simple one, waits for the Windows Defender signature update, which happens daily. Once Defender downloads a signature patch, it will immediately, before Defender launches the other process to install it, it will op-lock that patch. It will set a bunch of junction points and switch the location so that it points to the temp folder or some user writable folder instead. Defender now writes system files to the temp folder, and the POC then uses this to get an elevation of privileges to admin, and then it does some juvenile stuff like changes the user's password and things like that. Changes the password to fuck Microsoft, that sort of thing.
Relatively brilliant.
And he did this. This, by the way, was given CVE. CVE 2026-33825 with a CVSS of 7.8. Not the worst, but not fantastic. The problem is that this is a vulnerability in your antivirus. You run this program, and suddenly your antivirus is the vector for doing things that, you know, that you don't want done on your system. And the worst part about it is...
it's essentially a digital insider attack.
Yeah. Obviously, it's an elevation of privileges. It's not quite an RCE. It's, you have to still run code in the process of the, or in the context of the user. So you have to get the user to click on some jumping monkeys or something, but that's not that hard to do with phishing these days. But anyway, the thing that Microsoft really didn't like was, of course, was that he didn't just tell the world about this. He didn't tell Microsoft. He published a proof of concept on the GitHub. And even though Microsoft owns GitHub, they apparently didn't lock it down, which is probably good because it wouldn't have worked. Because within one day, there were over 400 forks of this GitHub repository. Anyway, Microsoft patched Blue Hammer in an out-of-band Defender update. So out-of-band meaning it wasn't just the regular Reboot Tuesday. When they patched it, by the way, they credited two other security researchers, neither of whom admits to being Nightmare Eclipse. So unless one of them is lying, then Microsoft also decided not to credit the guy who published this zero day. Okay.
Well, they claim not to know, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know the details. We're definitely not getting all the details. But when Microsoft released an out-of-band patch for Blue Hammer, then Nightmare Eclipse, Chaotic Eclipse, whatever his name is, he did it again. Two more times.
He warned them, though, that he was gonna.
Yeah, he released a proof of concept called Red Sun and another one called Undefend. According to his blog, it's way too funny when Windows Defender realizes that a malicious file has a cloud tag. For whatever stupid and hilarious reason, the antivirus that's supposed to protect decides that it's a good idea to just rewrite the file it found again to its original location. This POC abuses this behavior to overwrite system files and gain administrative privileges. I think anti-malware products are supposed to remove malicious files. So what this new one does is it writes down something with a signature that Defender will find so that Defender will quarantine the file. Then it very quickly nukes the file and sets a junction point underneath it to point to a system file, at which point Defender, in the process of trying to quarantine it, now writes the exploit it found to the system directory. Yeah. Okay. amazing to me. But anyway, in this case, the proof of concept just did example stuff like, you know, setting the system password, et cetera, et cetera. As of yesterday, the most recent article that I found, Red Sun and Undefend are still unpatched. All three, Red Sun, Undefend, and Blue Hammer, are being exploited in the wild. Attacks have been seen in the wild trying to attack these things. System administrators are being told to do the usual good security practices, minimize the admin accounts that you don't need, monitor your systems for unusual activity, don't run executables that you don't trust. And, you know, one that it wasn't in the article, but I'm going to add was install Linux.
Well, of course. I mean, yeah, they said I needed Windows 98 or better. So I installed Linux. the old joke.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like what Klaatu said. It said, if you build it, they will script kiddie it.
Yeah.
No lies detected.
No lies. Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So is there more to say on that story or I mean, it sounds like this is going to be a CVE factory. Microsoft,
that's exactly
the number one company
like
in CVE and generating CVEs.
Not wrong.
Yeah, I mean that is a fact, Jack. All right, so I guess it's my turn, right? Is that the way this works? Or wait a minute, you were, yeah.
Excuse me, did you forget the half a Ben sitting to your right, sir?
Okay, fine. You can take. I don't know who the next story was. That's right. He took
making sure that Sir Bemrose was done.
What? I am so done. what was there anything you had to add, or did I just completely destroy your entire topic on that one?
You did it better than I would have. On top of which, I'm glad that you took it because you do have kind of that insider track with the whole Microsoft thing. So I'm perfectly happy to just kind of be nodding along and, you know, the extra that you brought that I didn't have, you know. Yeah, fan-fucking-tastic is what that is. I laughed heartily when I saw that. I went, oh, that's gorgeous. So I will, this is going to be a two-parter. So I'll give you the first part. They are not related, but they are. So the one that I'll give you first is about the secretive AI hacking system that has sparked global scramble. So this involves researchers at Mozilla who pointed a powerful new AI tool at their code, and they had a feeling of vertigo. Yeah, bullshit.
They had a feeling of somebody turn up the AC because these GPUs are going a little crazy.
Big time. So Anthropic's Mythos system elevated AI from being merely a competent engineer software engineer. Dyslexia.
When was it that?
Oh, well, I mean, you know,
according to the marketing, which you know is perfect.
But wait, because it went from being a competent software engineer to a world-class elite security engineer.
No.
No. Hmm?
How
bullshit.
About no?
There we go. out of the cranky, you know, tech geek himself. But here's the thing, okay? Apparently, according to these assholes at Mozilla, this thing helped find and fix 271 flaws in the latest version of Firefox. So that just makes you feel real secure right there.
You know what else would help you with that is testing the stupid thing.
I mean, that would, you know, that would help too.
I wonder, by the way, I wonder if it found bugs from when the code was at Netscape back in the 90s.
You know, it may have. Because, so, these are some of the first findings since Mythos was announced to the world this month, saying that the model could supercharge the ability of hackers, making it too dangerous to release to the general public. I can tell you, Foamboy's day job is throwing a temper tantrum over the fact they didn't have EA
on
this.
That's dripping with marketing, by the way.
Oh, horribly. Horribly. So check this out. Anthropic's announcement has hit hard, setting off a scramble by government officials to understand what's at risk and reinvigorating a debate over what safety guardrails they should impose on powerful AI systems. Right. Yet, it does remain unclear how significant a threat Mythos and other advanced AI models will pose in the wild. Well, guess what? We have that answer already.
Here's the question that you're never going to get answered in an obvious ad spot like this. And that is, if this model is too dangerous for the average person to use, what is it about your Silicon Valley ass that makes you think that you can be trusted with it?
Well, I mean, there is that, but, you know, that's saying the quiet parts out loud. Well, here's the beautiful thing. This has actually even spilled over into government, because 47 is all about trying to, you know, figure out how do we secure it and how do we use it for military, and at the same time going, oh, we're not supposed to. So Mozilla suggests that the new models could prove adept at finding fresh security flaws in computer code, vulnerabilities known as zero days. Yeah, or it could create them, but don't look over here. So it says that it found one that had lurked undetected for 27 years, which is funny because you had asked that thing about the Netscape one, and it immediately made me think, like, yeah, that might have been the one it found.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's, I did briefly for like 5 months. I worked for Netscape in like 1997. So, okay, maybe that code was a little after that, but still, you know, yeah. I mean, that's an old bug.
It is. Now, they're saying it could allow companies and governments to reinforce their digital holdings. And at the same time, such tools could allow hackers to automate their attacks, speeding up their operations and making it possible for even people with no computer security training to stage digital break-ins.
Well, no shit.
So why fucking even create this? Why? It boggles my mind. Oh, it's too dangerous to let out to the public. What is your purpose in having it then? You can't tell me there's not some shenanigans going on here.
Because if people believe your marketing and they think it's too dangerous, they want it, which is the purpose of marketing.
Well, yes.
They're like, it's too dangerous, but we'll let you have it for an extremely high fee, and also we get to keep the leash.
It sounds like the cigarettes. Sounds like cigarettes, honestly. They advertise, and I don't know if you've seen cigarette packs in some of these countries. They put these really graphic images. It's almost like trading cards.
Oh, my
cards.
God, yes, I've actually seen it.
Oh, have you seen the
Black Lung.
The Black Lung.
That's the good one.
Oh, have you seen the one where she's got the little trachea tube, you know, or whatever.
Oh, you're talking about the commercials from back in the day?
Yeah.
Dennis Leary had a spot about that. He's like, you could make the cigarette called tumors, and people would be lining up around the block to get them. Yes. It's a drug. We're addicted.
Exactly.
Exactly. So it's like, of course, we're telling you it's dangerous, but you want to live dangerously, don't you?
Okay, so I need to ask you gentlemen a question. So right on the heels of that story, I do have one, which is the flip side of it, if you all would like me to take it, and then the two of you can have a, you know, can play tummy swords over who's going to take the last story.
Well, of course, but yeah, I'm good with you.
Do your worst.
Yeah, I think, but trust me, I think this is because I can see her headline in the screen. I think it's a good story. I think you'll love it.
It's a fantastic story, because right on the heels of the story that I just did, talking about how we can't unleash this on the public because if it fell into the wrong hands, oh, guess what? Anthropic's most dangerous AI model just fell into the wrong hands.
It starts out that way. Oh.
So here's the beautiful thing. They literally said that it could be dangerous if it fell in the wrong hands, and it's been accessed by a small group of unauthorized users. An unnamed group that identified only as a third-party contractor for Anthropic told the Bloomberg report. Yeah, they're you know, very, very on top of this. They're not even a tech, but anyway. So they told them that the members of a private online forum got into Mythos via a mix of tactics utilizing the contractor's access and, quote, commonly used internet sleuthing tools. Okay.
They probably
used Wireshark. You used, you know, some Metasploit. You know, you got in there. Now, here's the beautiful thing, okay? Anthropic currently has no plans to release the model publicly due to concerns that it could be weaponized.
Yeah, they had no plans to release the Claude Code source code either.
Exactly. So apparently, now you have to love how these guys actually accessed this. Well, in true form of all of these big dick companies that are turning to AI for everything, they just simply use the knowledge of Anthropic's other model formats obtained from a recent Merkur data breach to make an educated guess about its online location. And they've been using it regularly since gaining access, providing screenshots and a live demo of the model as evidence to the publication, though reportedly not for cybersecurity purposes in attempts to avoid detection by Anthropic. Well, duh. Of course you don't want to get caught because they're going to prosecute your ass. Do I think it's hilarious? Yes, because they literally just unleashed this shit on only a certain number of companies, and already somebody on the inside went, let me stick my finger in that.
It's almost like if you create the doomsday virus, then in every single story ever told, you can't keep it from getting out.
Well, duh. Yeah. Yes. Who knew that? Who knew that some of these stories were actually going to start coming true?
They never stopped to think if they should.
Nope. You're right. I think the comparison to Jurassic Park was absolutely spot on. Sam Altman and all these other evil bastards out there never stopped to think, just because we can, should we? I agree completely.
Sam Altman shows every single trait of a clinical psychopath.
And yet he's worth a cool fortune. And
well, that's because those traits are selected for at the top of Silicon Valley companies.
Yes, they are. I actually think it's even on the hiring questionnaire. You know, do you exhibit these traits? Are you a raging narcissist? Do you not have any soul? You're perfect for our upper management.
I think it pretty much attracts those kind of people. Honey, if we're honest,
for the kind of money those motherfuckers are making, I would sacrifice my virtues.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no amount of money I'd sacrifice virtues for.
I don't think I would.
No.
Which is probably why I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so all right. Is there anything we say in there? Yeah, the model got in the wrong hands, right? That's what.
That's literally what it was. My first story being, oh, look, we have this super secret model that even the government wants to get involved with, but shh, we can't let it out in the public because it's really dangerous, and if it got in the wrong hands, we'd be totally fucked. Uh-oh.
So the gist of your story is it got out, it ended up in the wrong hands, and my only retort is it started out that way.
I heard you as I started the story, and I don't disagree, but I just thought it would be a great little whipsaw of, oh, we shouldn't put it out in public because it's really dangerous, and if it got in the wrong hands, it could be catastrophic. Uh-oh. It got out.
Uh-oh.
I agree, yes. The irony is thick enough to spread on butter.
Where's my ICP? Uh-oh. Or ICQ or whatever.
Yeah, all right. So, Ryan, how about you do a story?
Okay, I've only got one story left and then one update from last week.
Sounds good.
So I guess I will start this one by asking, how long has your macOS device been up?
My macOS device, the one I'm using right now, I'm gonna give you a live update here. It has been up according to my system, and that's probably because I had to do a power.
Because being based on BSD, it has a built-in command called uptime.
Yes, exactly. That's right. It's a simple command. So it's been up for almost 13 days at this point. And I can
You're
tell
fine,
you when I powered
then.
It down because we had a power outage here. Yeah, we had a power outage, and so I had to power it down. Otherwise it pretty much stays up. So go on.
You're fine. 13 days, yeah. I should not point out that my computer's been up for 39.
Yeah, although this is not a dick measuring contest, okay?
Yeah, I will say one of the benefits is that you don't necessarily have to reboot to do updates. But, you know, unlike Microsoft. Anyway, the reason I ask is because it turns out that if you use a Macintosh or macOS device as a server, then you're holding it wrong. Some researchers at photon.cloud, and I would be referencing their story, except that their website was a fucking JavaScript nightmare, so no. I got this one from Tom's Hardware. What they discovered is that there is a bug in the TCP/IP stack of macOS. This bug has been there for, they didn't say which release it was dropped in. I looked at it, I could not find, but at least 10 years. Where after 49 days, 17 hours, 2 minutes, and 47 seconds of uptime, an internal register, which is a 32-bit unsigned register counting the number of milliseconds that the system has been up, overflows because, 4 billion milliseconds is just short of 50 days. When this register overflows, existing connections, network connections can stay open, but new ones will fail immediately without any error. The workaround is that if this starts to happen, you reboot the system, that resets the counter, and then you're good for another 50 days. This bug has been in macOS for, like I said, for more than a decade, and we're only finding out about it now, which tells me that either macOS devices are regularly rebooted less than every 49 days, which I think is likely, or more likely, also very likely, people don't use macOS as internet servers very often.
No, probably
not often.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know too many organizations that do that, and even here in Casa Lotus, yeah, there's a lot of Macs, but yeah, the one thing I could kind of call a server is running Linux. So, yeah, I wouldn't. It's not a, you know, Mac
OS. You really
OS
want to put that out in public?
No, that's fine. These are
what that you run Linux. I think it's okay.
No, the fact of what it's running on. I'm sorry. I am that person who absolutely gray rocks the shit out of anything personal, and shit like that I don't want put out there.
Yeah, but it doesn't. But at the end of the day, it's like one of about 100,000 things that they would have to be able to look at. So to you know, okay. I mean, yes, it's anyway. I don't think that's it still doesn't narrow it down much. You know, in terms
well,
of like.
I think that the Mac OS is not necessarily, you know, it's not the first call for somebody for machines with long uptime. It's pretty much always a client OS, I think. You're probably not going to find it for a long server. When it is your client OS, your daily driver, you're probably rebooting it, you know, at least once a month. That's kind of how things go. I get that, but how has this bug been this long and nobody was like, hey, you know, when my uptime gets really long, my network just stops working entirely. Nobody figures this out.
Yeah,
no, because they automatically jiggle the handle.
Yeah.
You try turning it off and back on again?
By the way, we had, this is an old bug. But it's along these lines, actually. It's not an uptime thing, but it had something to do with VRP, which is a virtual router redundancy protocol. And actually, I know one of the guys whose name's on the RFC. He was there a long time anyway. But this bug would. It's like after I don't know, it was 270 something days, and this is actually something that came through the TAC back in the day. I remember and. And it was one of the, so we actually had a bug exactly like this. It was just the thing would, you know, I don't know, it would reboot or something after a certain number of days. So we had one of those bugs in it, and we actually fixed it, you know? And it was, yeah, anyway, maybe Apple's just finally, you know, I don't know, nobody ever reported it to Apple because it was such a pain in the ass to report bugs to them or whatever. I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know. We found a bug like that. Why can't somebody else? And it's because nobody's using the product like that. Nobody's really using it.
If you're actually trying to use it as a server, you're clearly holding it wrong.
Exactly. I think that's fucking hilarious. So, is it fixed now or is it probably not? Okay.
No, I don't know if it'll ever be fixed. I guess Apple theoretically knows about it. Now the world knows about it because these Photon people published it. But I mean, like I said, it has a well understood workaround, which is you reboot less than every 50 days.
Well, yeah, then that's, I mean, with all the forced updates and everything, yeah, that's actually something that, you know, I mean, the only reason mine gets rebooted because either I have to do an update or, you know,
I was just thinking, like, especially if it was a Windows machine, finding a Windows machine anywhere these days that has more than 40 days of uptime is probably quite a difficult chore. I don't know if Apple has the same philosophy on reboots, but
I remember some of our legacy platforms. This was probably more than 15 years ago at this point. We had customers that sent us uptime screenshots of like 7 years on a firewall. You know, this,
yeah,
trust me, it's not doing, it's like, well, it, I guess it still works, you know, and it's our,
well, that was an amazing brag back in the day, precisely because there was a command called uptime. But these days, you know, especially somebody security minded, you're like, you really haven't rebooted, like you haven't switched kernel or anything in that long.
Yeah, exactly.
might want to patch something.
Yeah, but you know what? It's funny. By the way, I'm glad you mentioned that. It's the first. Sitting here thinking about that, yeah, that makes nothing but sense because I'm going, yeah, we think. I mean, hell, like on the iPhones, they reboot after like a day or two, just kind of on general principle because they do it as a
security. Because they start fucking things.
Their system has memory leaks. Let's be honest.
Well, of course, but yeah, it solves a lot of it masks a lot of software bugs that they then don't have to fix.
My Samsung pesters me once a week to reboot the phone, whether I've even used it or not.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's because Samsung knows goddamn well that every one of their app has memory leaks, and they like, oh, it gets really slow if you don't reboot at least once a week. So let's just force a reboot instead of fixing our shit.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, exactly. I mean,
but it does fix other things like resetting your TCP/IP timer.
Well, exactly, it does all kinds of jeez, I know this. Yeah, you know, they don't make stuff like they used to. That's, yeah. Well, yet another thing. Apple Music becomes unusable if you try and use it with a VPN. Yeah, probably not. I'm guessing
it starts out that way.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way. Yeah. All right, so I technically have three more stories. I don't think any of them are actually going to.
Look at the overachiever.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you. I think they're very relatively short. So I've got one that says the RAM shortage could last years, which is basically well, the, you know, what
if
else
the
is
AI new? Bubble doesn't go ahead and fucking pop already.
Yeah. So, but I think, what's interesting that says. You know, they're not going to have new fab capability up until like 2028 at best.
Can't,
and so
can't we just pull the RAM out of the $8 trillion worth of data centers?
Well, we should.
I mean, don't give ideas to people at this point, because I really truly think that the expansion of these centers is going to quash long before 2027 or 2028.
Yeah. So that's one. And I'll, like I said, I get this. I don't think there's much to say about this. This one has a clip to it.
Oh, Elon.
So, yeah. Because this is talking about, well, okay. So apparently because Twitter can't not keep shooting itself in the foot, right? Yeah. If you use a third party app to post a link in your updates, which, you know, I don't know, all the different content providers do. Yeah. Now it's, they apparently at some point decided to charge companies to use the AI instead of using their front end for whatever reason.
Because it costs money use the AI.
Well, the API. Yeah. Duh. But okay. So now they're saying, oh, if you're going to provide a link, oh, it's going to cost you 20 cents per link instead of just a penny. And it's
holy inflation, Batman.
Yeah, 1900%. Like, that's just stupid shit. But this, okay, so that's not really a, that's not really a, you know, that that's just kind of social media eating itself kind of
this
thing.
Sounds like both, I'm as a observer, I see no problem with this because this both reduces spam and, well, okay, I guess my question is when do I get a check for that 20 cents?
But well, yeah, that would be nice. Okay, but this one I think is probably something. This is this final story I've got here is has the title "Regular Password Resets Aren't as Safe as You Think."
Duh.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. From the humans are still the weakest link department. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. The April 2025 attack on UK retailer Marks & Spence disrupted operations nationwide, leading to a 5-day suspension of online sales that equated to an average of £3.8 million or £5.1 million in daily losses. Attackers linked to the hacking group, the April 2025 attack on UK. I already read all that. I don't know how that got copy pasted twice. All right. Attackers linked to the hacking group's scattered spider are believed to have gained initial access by impersonating an M&S employee and contacting a third-party service desk. The password reset was carried out, giving them legitimate credentials, thereby removing the need to exploit any technical vulnerability.
Holy nah. Shit, gave them just the fucking key.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have held for a very long time, and I have received a great deal of flack from IT security people who are parroting their religious teachings, saying that forced password changes and password complexity requirements are bad for security far more often than you ever. The standard line amongst dudes named Ben is simply, well, of course you want everybody to change their password every 5 minutes to a new random string that has, you know, 16 uppercase letters and 12 lowercase letters and three symbols and two numbers and a demonic glyph in them. Yeah, like, all of these things are counter to security precisely because password complexity is never the weakest link. The weakest link is always the people who, when you force somebody to memorize a difficult password every 30 days or whatever the hell your stupid requirement is, they're going to write it on a post-it note every goddamn time. That is how your password policy is defeated. Whereas if you just let them choose a 25 character passphrase that they can memorize and keep for 6 to 12 months, they are not going to have to write it down. They are not going to defeat your security by writing post-it notes or putting it in a goddamn text file in their home directory. Seen that happen. Somebody got hacked because they showed a screenshot.
Oops.
The conventional wisdom of requiring passwords that are exactly as difficult as any dictionary word to brute force, but are impossible for a human to memorize, is absolutely counterintelligent. It harms security. And the fact that conventional IT wisdom is always, you know, we need to make sure that our password policies are such that people can never memorize their passwords. How do it is a religion amongst IT people to think that that somehow helps. Okay, I'll stop ranting for the moment.
Jeez. Why would you do
oh,
that?
Oh, ranting again? No, sorry.
Anyway, but of course, obviously, you get access to a system. You can pretty much, basically, yeah, you have the keys to the kingdom, and from there, you can do anything you know. Yeah, I mean, that's just completely, you know. Okay, what else? It's like we haven't learned anything. That this is not the way to do. Anyway, like, okay, I don't know. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm bored.
Okay. All I've got left is one really quick update to a story we brought last week, Microsoft, again, it's always Microsoft. Why is it always Microsoft? when they started shutting down developer accounts because of their policies. They had a policy that said, you know, we require you to have two-factor authentication and to, you know, make sure that you give your real name and your photo ID. And also we have special cages where we'll keep your firstborn son until he reaches 18 while you work on your development. Yeah, that Microsoft has some bullshit policies that aren't probably not quite that bad, but up there. And they started, if you recall last week's show, they started suspending developer accounts of some pretty high profile software like Veracrypt and Wireshark.
Yeah, nobody's heard of those products before.
Yeah, well, they in standard Silicon Valley way, they got some pushback on that, so they immediately backed off. In this case, Scott Hanselman, who is the head of their development division, came in. By the way, Scott Hanselman, actually one of the nicest guys I ever met at Microsoft, but he's still corporate. Either way, they realized that the company was in the wrong, obviously, so they scrambled to correct for bad press. They said that, oh, well, we're creating a new system to allow you to get your account back. It is temporary. It is a fast track system for any accounts affected by our policy. It's dripping with corporate crap.
Well, of course. I mean, you would expect.
Anyway, Hanselman's response was, well, we've heard your feedback. We know that some partners whose accounts were suspended following account verification are experiencing challenges regaining access to the hardware dev center.
Challenges that Microsoft created.
Yes, exactly. Protecting the security of the Windows ecosystem remains our highest priority, and we are adding a temporary process to accelerate the reinstatement experience for partners who are able to resolve outstanding compliance requirements.
Yeah, which means they're pretty much still wanting you back in the system, it sounds like.
The company also addressed issues developers reported with the support workflow. The company advised partners to ensure they are signed in with the correct account when submitting tickets and to continue prompting Copilot to create a ticket if automated assistance fails. They still don't have a phone number you can contact a person or an email or anything. The official message, if your automated assistance fails, is to contact Copilot? What is wrong with these people?
Well, I can tell you what's wrong with them.
We are very simple people with very small penis.
I can't think of a better...
So I brought that up because it was a follow-up and because I choked a little bit and my words curdled a little when...
Whose mouth
when
did you
I read
throw
that
in?
Much corporate speak.
Yeah, way too much corporate speak.
And I actually like when I met him and I briefly were, you know, Scott Hanselman, really cool guy. I would totally have a beer with him, but man, this is just some bullshit.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely sounds like a lot of bullshit.
And does that count as name dropping? I probably shouldn't do that.
Well, it probably does. I mean, dox the motherfucker. Yeah, that could be a show title. Okay, so this episode didn't quite get to an hour and a half, and that's okay because we've had a couple of long episodes here.
Well, that was because Sir Bemrose, you know, kind of goofed off.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. That's okay with us, I think.
There was all that. There was all that porn. See,
right.
Nope. I can't fix my buttons.
I'll fix your buttons.
Hell. No, I was definitely going to say that's exactly why he didn't have as many stories, because he got lost down a porn rabbit hole. And I know it involved things that we're not talking about here.
Yeah, that would
she,
be...
She was just wearing a rabbit costume.
Oh my God!
Oh my God! Okay, so... I'm at Starbucks in K-Town when we did the internship today, which, you know, of course was that was fun.
I arguably skipped out an hour early. Yeah. Fuck it.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm sitting outside and doing my thing. Or I think I had went inside to go to the bathroom, and I came back outside to, you know, basically resume sitting at my table. And as I was coming out of the bathroom, I literally saw somebody in a furry costume with Crocs on.
And did you fall down a rabbit hole?
No. I immediately walked outside and around the person and to go back to my table. And then I saw the person leave the Starbucks and get in their car. One of these little Scion, you know, boxy cars that, you know, I don't know.
It's just what you would expect.
I mean, don't get me wrong. People like that absolutely exist in Seattle. But it's one of many, many reasons I don't go to Seattle. But I was thinking of Playboy bunnies.
That's immediately what I thought of. I actually know somebody who had one of those cars, honestly. I just don't get the point of those cars, but yeah, this...
I don't get the point of going out in public looking like that.
Well, no, I just...
No self-respect.
I mean, I'm kind of going, okay, well, yeah.
From anyone else either.
Yeah. Well, given the number of college kids that were at that Starbucks today, yeah, I wouldn't, there's got to be a furry somewhere.
Okay. Then three strikes. First, you were in K-Town. Second, you were near a college. And third, you were at Starbucks. What did you expect?
Hey, you're not wrong.
No, you're not wrong. All right. I think.
Although, oh my God, you should have seen the goth girl shortly before you picked me up that walked by. Her ass cheeks are hanging out. She's got tattoos of barbed wire on both the top, like right at the bottom of the butt cheek, top of the thigh. Shorty short black shorts. Spiked dog collar. The black lipstick. And I'm just thinking, you poor child.
Well, tattoos are just for people who lack confidence in the natural flaws in their skin.
I have no issue with the tattoos. My issue is
I'm just trying to start shit.
As adorable as her butt cheeks were, I didn't want to see them.
And I got the glare I was expecting.
As you should have. But I just, it's like, how do you even, like, how do you function? Goth is so 10 years ago, first of all.
Yeah, people were goth in the night. I remember people in college being fucking goth.
Yeah.
Like in the early 90s. My God.
What's the opposite of a hipster?
A square, I think.
Just somebody who, instead of being 10 years early for a trend, they're 10 years late.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God.
Klaatu says poser.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I just literally can't even because...
I don't think we should try to go for 2 hours.
No, let's not. I think not at this rate. I think we're happy to be at about an hour and a half. So, all right. I guess I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today for 2.5 Bens.
I won't. Fuck you all.
Anyway, I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
And
I'm Sir Bemrose.
And let's get the fuck out of here.
It's game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?